So with that in mind, sometimes it comes into question of pace, right? What's too fast? What's too slow? How do you do this? And I think that Chief Kutsine set that up pretty early on of, there's been discussions on this, and I've heard it varied anywhere from 6 years to 3 years, but officially, CAG formed about a year and a half ago, as you know. They delivered their message in April, and so we're about 6 months into post-CAG. I know that if I've been out and I've gotten feedback from other people in the community that's like, why isn't this done already? What are you doing? Is this still important? Because 6 months have gone along. I think that when you've heard, just touching the surface, we have a few other points to go into for you, what we've done is you can't go too fast if you don't have good answers. So as Carl said, there were baby steps to go. While CAG did a lion's share of the work in setting foundation and doing background, we would be way behind if they hadn't done what they already did. At the same time, now we needed to look through and make sure whether it's legal, whether it's the right thing. And I think Chairman Edwards stated it early on that the goal is to make sure that we focus on the community and we focus on doing what the CAG and the community want us to do exponentially, but fiscally responsibly. And we don't have the answers. And we couldn't go out until this point until we had some of those answers. So whether it was legal advice, whether it was, can we even do some of the recommendations that came from CAG? Because there was a couple that they recommended that you just can't legally do. So for example, when it comes to delivery of service to the Outer Islands, one of the CAG recommendations was is just give the care to them for free. Well, you can't legally do that. It's called gifting of public dollars, and you can't do that, as you all well know. So as we went through, we needed to get our information correct before we move forward. The other thing that we would be remiss if we didn't say, and that is the steering committee is advisory back to the electives, to you all and to the fire commission. The steering committee is not making a decision. You all, as the elected representatives of the community, are making the decisions and giving your employees, your chief executive officers, whether that's Chief Kutsing or myself, direction. And we will do what you want us to do, and we are trying to empower you with the best information that we have available. That's why the work that's coming together and why this work session is good. We've been able to, as Carl said, meet with the fire commissioners. Obviously, we've met with Rebecca. Obviously, we've met with Frank because they're on the committee. I would also like to throw out to you and to Chuck as you're doing scheduling. We did have the opportunity to meet with Chairman Edwards and with Superintendent Hutchins. We still need to have personal time with both you, Commissioner Sweeney, and with you, Commissioner Appleton, and as well as Commissioner Lindstrom, right? We need to have that personal touch time because, as Nathan said, having that personal one-on-one touch time is important. This sets up the foundation, but having that dialogue with you, we still want to have that. So do please still try to get those meetings scheduled for us. But we answer to you all. So there's already been discussion and report back on the board configurations. All these play, so also to know going forward. I've written down of what we've heard as we've moved forward, either visiting with different commissioners, visiting with the public. There's some concerns, and rightfully so. We have some internal concerns that have been brought forward. We have some external concerns that have been brought forward. One is financials, right? How do we make sure that both organizations are protected with some of the outlying or outstanding investigations? And I know that Commissioner Warren Appleton has asked about those, so I don't need to hop into those because you have those. Some of the stuff, though, when it comes to board configuration, we have informed two commissions. That comes down to the voter and what the commission wants to do as to whether it goes forward. We're trying to empower you with the knowledge base. And I know that that discussion is still out there. Also know going forward that these are dynamic times. And we have two very dynamic organizations. That we may start something and we will find that it either works and we continue, or we find that it doesn't work and we need to adjust. So the recommendation from the steering committee, as you know, was keep it at a three commission position, because around our state, that's the majority of the governance bodies. There's many that are like yours that are five. CAG recommendation was you need to grow to five and mandate that one of them is an EMS held position and one of them is a town held position. You can't do that legally. So know that while the recommendation from us as the steering committee was hold at three, If we find that that doesn't work and it's not getting good feedback from the community and we need to grow that, well, then my recommendation to the fire committee and the commission will be, I think you need to go back out to a vote and grow to 5 so that we have good community input and interaction. But again, that would be up to the commission. Licensing. Could you talk about where we are? Because that's a huge component as we come together.
Absolutely. And where we are, and I think I updated you all on this right now, our license for being a trauma-certified ambulance service is renewed every 2 years. Our renewal cycle is November of this year. So to match that, to meet that need, there's kind of a two-way process. We submit our application, the county trauma and EMS council looks at that, says, yep, we think you're on, or no, we don't like your ideas. That hasn't ever happened for them to say, no, we don't want you to do this. But it's part of the process. The county trauma council then bumps it to the region. The region looks at it, says, does it fit our regional plan? Yes or no. They make a recommendation to the state board of health. So, Department of Health, thank you, not the Board of Health. Appreciate that. So, in order to meet those timelines, both the county trauma council and the regional council meet quarterly. They offset by a month. So, for us to meet that November deadline, we need to have the applications in process and in place completed for review by the county trauma council for their September meeting. That got bumped up 2 weeks, but we made that. The application for EMS is done. That allows them to then meet with the regional trauma council in October. That's early in October. That gives the Department of Health two good months to review it, look at it, and say yay or nay. So the EMS renewal application is finished. The idea was that we want to try to get fire into the Department of Health system. The easiest way to do that, and which also saves a lot of angst on the part of that often we tap fire resources to respond to critical calls, either CPR in progress, MVAs, big picture kinds of things. We're covered because we have EMTs who are cross-trained, who often respond with fire. When they respond in a medical situation, they're covered under EMS. However, they responded on a fire apparatus, and it gets fuzzy. So we thought, not only do we get fire into the system, but we make sure they're covered by having them initially apply for a BLS aid license, which means they show up, they don't transport, but they show up and they're licensed by the state to do that. That then allows, as we work out the integration process, we get to the point where operationally, boundary, funding, all the pieces are in place, and we say, all right, go. I mean, you say, all right, go. You say, all right, go. Then we can scale down the EMS ambulance license and scale up a fire or an integrated systems ambulance license simultaneously. So this one turns off, this one turns on, we're good to go because we can't transfer the license. So we're on track. And fire's initial application is that close to being done, and I'm confident that we'll make the September deadline for review by the county trauma council and then the regional trauma council. Ultimate approval by the state may take longer, but they're not under any sort of renewal deadline. So I think we're in really, really good shape.
The other key point on that is, sounds complex, it's the correct direction to go, and we took that advice from both Katie Holstein, who is responsible at the state level for EMS licensing, and then when her key person that's working through it is Jason
Norris.
And they both said, if you want this to integrate, and we agree that this is the right way to go, then these are the steps you want to take. It wasn't at the end, have fire spool up, an ALS transport license, a BLS transport license. They said, in order to make this work, and they know the timing of the shut off one to turn on the other, go through the full trauma council review to get your BLS first response license. Then the process is checked, the personnel is checked, everything is in line so that when integration should the public and as everything was pushed forward as you both gave us direction to do happens, we go to the state, they know it's coming. It's a matter of, okay, this is what we're doing. If they shut one off, they turn the other one on because we've done what they guided us to do. And that will take that process, and we are absolutely on track. Bottom line, though, if this doesn't play out because the community doesn't want it to happen, you will still get better first response care because we can have closest response once fire obtains the BLS first response license. My concern, and since we're having work session and I've already shared it with the commission, is even though I've been told with all confidence that when fire responds out on a injury motor vehicle accident and they get on scene first and they start to provide care, that it's okay and it is covered. I've been told that by a couple different physicians. When I dig, and I will trust yet verify, when I dig into the law, however, I don't see where that's in code anywhere. So in my opinion, and I see that Dr. Warren Appleton, and this one, I'm throwing that one specifically because you were a physician advisor in MPD, we have to have a care license in order to provide that care. We're not, if we're responding, representing the fire district, we are fire district employees, we're not EMS employees. We have to have that care license because it is part of the comprehensive care and response plan for our community. This sets us up for that, and we are on track for that September 4th meeting to get that in line and down the road. So, one, we're removing a piece that I saw as a risk for us, and Carl and his team have been spot on in helping support. So it's one more example of where our organizations are working together to the protection of our communities. I want to ask you, Mr. Chair, since Carl and I have spoken for 45 minutes of your time, I want to make sure that we meet your needs. Looking down the things, we do have some discussions that we wanted to throw out there for you in briefing on levies, elections, even though we've covered some, and then a couple closing remarks, but I want to make sure that we follow your work session as you would like.
Well, I think there's no use opening up to the board for question and answers in the face of incomplete presentations. So I would prefer, with the consent of the board, that you carry on. If you would need to extend beyond 3 o'clock, I'll beg for that too. But how does the board feel? Agreed?
Yes.
Warren?
I have questions.
Uh-huh.
Go ahead. Okay. I'm here. I'm going to get another crack at him anyway. Yeah. You just told me.
Well, that's it.
I might get two or three cracks at him.
Yeah. But I think we want to be with you specifically, too, like we said. So.
But I think it's, you know, in our best interest to have sort of an overview in a complete way. You know, it's very complex. That's evident already in the first 45 minutes. Even though you guys speak fast, you know, it's there's more to talk about. I think we need to hear that, and then Dr. Apple can swing in a few questions there at the end.
How's I think we've hit most, we've covered most of the
okay, good.
Points.
There Talk
is,
faster.
There's one last point, and that's the funding the levies right now. And it was, what was suggested by the CAG was a levy lid lift on the part of the fire district to provide services for EMS. Another potential was to maintain the current fire levy, maintain the current EMS levy. There's pros and cons to both those kinds of situations. The fact that the EMS levy renews every 6 years kind of helps reset it, matches property values. It kind of keeps us current with inflationary costs, costs of services, those kinds of issues. What we started to look at was we did some hard looks at and analyzing. The millage rate for Fire District 3 was first set at $1 per thousand. Through the course of time and the way the Washington law works, effectively, fire is collecting 54 cents per thousand. That's their effective collection rate. EMS, when we went out for a 50 cent per thousand levy rate, since we're 2 years into that now, 3 years into that?
Two
years into that. Effectively, we're collecting 47 cents per thousand. When you combine those, what kind of made sense to us was saying, you know, we don't have to go to $1.50, which was kind of the suggestion, the fire original rate and the EMS original rate. We're pretty damn close to $1 per thousand. 97 cents, I think it's what it comes out. But if we round it up to 1,000, we're basically saying, let's do a levy liberal that says, let's set it back to where it was when it was first enacted, $1 per thousand. We can provide EMS and fire protection services to our residents. We think we can do that. We're pretty confident. Also keeps on the table that if we decide we need more funding, fire by law can go up to $1.50. We could reinstate a EMS specific levy if we find that, like our programs that were our outreach programs that we're doing, such as community paramedicine, which right now is a pilot program, that pilot funding runs out and they haven't identified any sort of alternate revenue streams. We could very well go back to our community and say, we've been doing this for the last couple of years. We think it's working. We think it helps our citizens. Do you think it helps? And is it something you're willing to pay for? So we can have a specific levy for those kinds of things. Guarantee that 911 service is covered. They don't have to worry about that. They can then decide whether we want extended services. We want the community paramedicine. We want mobile imaging. We want, you know, there's all sorts of things that we could ramp up to best serve our community. But those pieces, those are still on the table. So to ease the process, our recommendation at this point in time is let's go for a lid lift, reset it $1. And again, this is at this particular point in time. And move on from there. I think I hit all the highlights.
You did. So what I would like to do, I would be remiss. Chair of my commission came. I would like to give him a moment or two to make any comments. And then I have two closing pieces for you, which will be very short and succinct, and turn it back over to you.
I think I'll keep my comments short and brief. We've been through this before. They've been the presentations by each one of us commissioners as well as to us in open session. Pretty much it's verbatim the same information that's been presented to you as it was to us on the fire side. I think it's an outstanding job that our committee has done, and I think we need to move forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So my closing comments that I have to you is, as we put together the steering committee, as we present to you all, and we always have an open door. If you want to talk to anyone on the steering committee at any point in time, reach out to us. We want to keep you informed because you're a conduit to the community and you're a direct conduit to us. So we're trying to meet the request of the community and the CAG to integrate within no longer than 2 years. Our focus is on service delivery to our community before, during, and after an incident. I turn it back over to you and thank you for your time and your commission's time.
Thank you, gentlemen, and Commissioner Jarman. Dr. Appleton, you had some questions and we still have 10 minutes.
So we talked about outreach to the communities. We talked about the process of reaching them, but what are we selling them? What are we exactly offering them? Are we setting a standard of care that we can meet? And what is the standard that we're, I mean, Henry is not going to get 8-minute responses. They're not going to get 5 fire trucks. So what are we setting ourselves up to fail by offering too much? How are we going to set that standard that we can live to?
Could I just jump in real quick and just say there was no intent. We're not selling anything. There's no sale here. This is strictly laying out the process that began with CAG and then moved on to integration, explaining what is being served today and how it's being served today, and explaining what is possible going forward. I mean, I think that's important. It's this is not a political.
But what is possible going forward is can be interpreted as a promise.
So, if I may,
please, Carl.
So, With respect to chair of the CAG, I would kind of, I agree, yet I will paraphrase and reform to where I know you're going. And that is, as we define a level of service, it's not selling anything, but it's having dialogue and defining a standard of cover and a standard of care to those places. I personally believe, and we're already working on this from a standard of cover perspective on our current service delivery model. I believe if you look outside of our area, most areas have service delivery response criteria for different areas. If you're in an urban area, it usually has an urban response criteria, a suburban response criteria, and a rural response criteria.
And you have the ultra
rural. Think we can overlay it from us and have a town service delivery response area and expectation, a San Juan Island, whether it's a fire or an EMS response, and then we can have an outer island, because as you articulated, we can't drive yet. Water, cars, vehicles don't work that way, right? But if we have dialogue with those communities and have them involved in the level of care that they can expect realistically, we can have that dialogue and define it. Right now, EMS to deliver where you're already within the district is Henry, Stewart, Johns, and all those. Right now, it's dependent upon the one shared resource that is between the sheriff and the fire department. We meet in Friday Harbor and we go. I would throw out there that I don't think they know that that's how long it takes. My philosophy is, and the commission, if you disagree, I know I've had this out there and you've agreed in concept, is we look at the amount of funds that are coming in and we need to dedicate resources. And I'm not saying that if this is what's coming in financially from the Outer Islands, 100% gets put back in. We have an obligation to our community to deliver the service better with our funds, whether it's our current district or the contemplated new. In my opinion, we need a second boat on the north side to reduce those response times to get critical care there. I will also say that in this dialogue and caring for our community, Carl and I have opened up additional dialogues with Island Air in how can we get resources on the ground quicker to take care of the needs, whether it's fire or EMS. That's outside of this, but it's because we believe in caring for our community. Additionally, how do we help them? We may not be able to get a fire engine there in that time or a paramedic there in that time, but we sure as heck can train people on island if they're willing to a first response standard, to an EMT standard, and then push resources there, whether it's a GO kit, a BLS kit, a smaller response rate. We've talked about apparatus, but we have them help define it with us. And then you all help define to us, because in the end, you manage our money.
And we can do the same. We're already doing that with medical response, EMS response. It goes up and down. It goes back and forth. And where our focus has been is it's going to take time to get to you, period. So what can we do? We have a jump kit. We're there. It's stocked. It's staffed. We know where they're. We define LZs for rotary or weather or fixed wing aircraft to come from medevac. We define if they're going to find out and they're going to jump in a private boat, where do we meet them? How do we, what's the best thing? And provide them the education that they need so that they can take care, you know, on site until we can get there. We can do the same thing as we start to ramp up fire service as well.
Just the question is there just to plant it in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
Second question is you have EMTs, you have fire, and you have EMT fires. You insure them from your side, we insure them from our side. Have we talked to our insurance? I mean, as a plaintiff's attorney, you always look for two different insurers, and it's that, lo and behold, something goes wrong to get internal fights going. Mm-hmm. And we looked at that.
In which way, sir?
In which way as to we're double insuring many people.
Right now, correct.
Is there a way, have we thought, you know, as one of our first moves, can we single insure?
Good point.
I will say...
Just to point it out.
Specifically, no, we haven't, because that would have been, we integrated, it happened, so it's there. What's it going to cost? How we do it? That is a huge point that we should explore right now.
And the other one is you have contracts between your employees.
We actually only have one set of contracts, and it's with the paramedics. No other one has a contract.
Other than Norman and myself.
Okay.
Correct.
And you have no other contracts with your paid employees?
We pay them, but there's none under a bargaining unit. The only bargaining unit contract is with the four paramedics. And on that regard, the two of us have said it's time to meet with them. The paramedics have got together, and they're like, we need to have some questions answered. We're working well together. We're going down this road. Let's get together. So actually, within the last week, we are working to find a time for the two of us to get together with that represented contract group.
And then that discussion will obviously then come back to this commission.
Completely.
Because we're the ones that have to sign off on it.
That is absolutely correct. Okay. And that is contemplated.
And contracts, what are we selling? Are we setting up a standard? Is there any truth to the rumor that Lainey Volk is going to jump school so she can jump and parachute into the islands?
I heard it was for wildland specifically.
Just for you, Lainey.
She's going to be a smoke jumper is what I heard too. So.
Those are my two. But when we meet privately, I have about 20 questions written out at home.
Okay, of course.
Those are the two of my big ones.
So Lainey, I understand, is looking for sponsors.
I'm willing to push.
Dr. Mark, question.
Yeah, do you have any present or anticipated interlocal agreements?
We have a draft that we're reviewing. It's an intergovernmental agreement, mm-hmm. And it is for administration only.
What's the timeline on that?
We have a draft in hand. We've talked, but we haven't, we haven't finalized anything. We haven't talked about when that would be implemented.
We're meeting again on Tuesday, however.
You have a draft of that?
There can't be a timeline because it has to come through you all as to whether that would play out or not.
Do you have a work product for us and a anticipated timeline?
I would let our chairs, we were directed by the chairs to look into something as good governance, and I would turn over to how you guys.
Well, we have to look at the concept first and see if it's palatable. Again, it's an incremental sort of a staging affair. Mark, in terms of its administrative only, and then we'll have to look at the nuances, the devil's in the details. It has sort of a built-in timeline, to my understanding, but again, it needs to be scrutinized by the entire board from a conceptual perspective initially, and then we look at the nuts and bolts of it. Yeah. We have a timeline driven by the considerations brought forth earlier. They have to keep an eye on as well. So
we have a timeline here in October, so that's like a month.
For the interlocal grant, pertaining to what? Command
pertaining
and control,
to the administration
communication
only.
Okay. How about command and control and communication? Can something be done sooner?
So, from a boots on the ground perspective, that doesn't take direction from you. You already gave it to us to make it happen. So, currently, on the communication standpoint and command and control, communication wise, Carl and I have opened up dialogue with Robin as dispatch director to say we have three operating channels right now. We need to get on one for dispatch and then operate on two. No, we're already in the process of making that work. The secondary piece is we are jointly training with each other from officers' perspective so that we get on the same page. Communications fits within the ICS structure, incident command system structure. So from a governance standpoint, command and control, we're getting all on the same page. As evident from last night, common nomenclature, common working channel, and we're driving that to make sure they're all on the same page from those. But nothing from you all pushing. We felt it was the right thing to do, so
excellent.
We're doing it.
Yeah, and that's what raised the question is, did you have some sort of agreement to use a single channel?
Nope, we came together, said it was the right thing, reached into the group and said what would help us, what would help our people respond better, and we said we're going to make it happen.
Great. And as we're moving forward with the whole CODAM proposal, redoing that, that was one of the considerations as well. A countywide channel.
Eventually.
And then, island-specific channels on multiple channels that can then handle multiple incidents, but still commonality.
To answer your question, Mark, I've been always a big advocate on one button to push ever since I've worked over there at that dispatch center and wired that thing up and watched the dispatchers work. I've always been down to push one button. Instead of all these buttons they end up to go over there and push, it's always irritated me. We need to be on a one button dispatch so that the dispatcher can push that button and continue doing their dispatching without having to worry about, did I do the south radio? Did I do this one? Did I do that one? Make life easy for the dispatcher. Speeds up our service delivery.
It's good messaging, too. One button.
It's easy to remember. Our time is up, gentlemen. Unfortunately, I'd like to reiterate what Chairman said, is that, you know, we are beholden to you and the steering committee and the sub-steering committees, as well as the CAC, for getting this ball rolling. It's been talked about for many, many, many years. And talked about. That's about it. And now there's a lot of balls in the air. Things are happening. And like you say, you know, the operational premise is do the best for the community. Ultimately, it will result in just that. So my hat's off. I'm sure I'm speaking for the board. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming.
And Chuck, thank you, sir. And I guess Jarman, thank you.
You bet.
Thank you, Chuck.
With the board's consent, I'd like to take a 5-minute break. Is that okay?
Yes.
Very good.
Reorient things.